It's the Tiltcast, episode 604, Thanksgiving Tacos.
And this week, guys, we talk Stalker 2 and Indiana Jones, The Great Circle. Stay tuned.
Tacos?
Old El Paso. Guys.
Ah.
We're back. It's the Tiltcast. It's an M-rated show. I'm Nas.
I'm Jason.
I'm asleep. Rusty.
And with the three of us, you're going to get about 30 minutes of bullshit. Some games, some news. It is 48 degrees outside, feeling like 44 on December the 8th on a Sunday at about 1:36 p.m. Central Time. We haven't recorded very regularly recently. We've got stuff in the tank. We've got lots of stuff in the tank, honestly. Hopefully for the casual listener, it won't sound that much different. You'll be like, oh, they had like posted 3 days late a couple of times, maybe three times, maybe four times. And then that turned into, that's like 2 weeks of lates, essentially. But that does mean that we have stuff in the tank. So I dumped my energy drink all over myself.
Don't do that.
I just poured it on my crutch. That was smooth.
it's
going to be wet, just wet right on the tip.
Don't do that. It's bad.
I need that. What is this? These are old work notes. This will be good for today's notes.
What are you doing?
Getting ready to whip out my pen and paper for notes.
Oh, boy. Oh, man. I'm sorry if I sound tired. I've been kind of drugged through a lot of social shit over the last few days, and I'm exhausted. I'm tired, boss. I'm real tired.
I'm tired, boss. I'm screen mile over here. I feel that. Like next weekend, we'll be doing a podcast on a Saturday. On Sunday, I'm going to drive about 250 miles to do the biggest photo gig I've ever done, which I'm pretty excited about that and also fucking nervous. Yeah, and then all weekend, the last week has been a blur. I've been so busy at work, I barely got time to game. But I say barely got time to game. I'm making a lot of progress in Stalker, so.
Stalker.
But I've got my Christmas shopping done. I've done a lot of cooking. I don't know. Is this the first podcast after Thanksgiving, right?
Yep. I think so.
Yeah, Jason, what did you guys make?
What did you make? So, with my parents, because they had to leave the day before Thanksgiving, we just went ahead and did tacos because my parents, for obvious reason, my dad's a ex-transplant patient, etc. So he doesn't really like. They don't really eat unhealthily a lot.
So when you say tacos, you mean like Old El Paso taco shells, ground beef with Old El Paso seasoning and cheddar cheese?
No. But I do mean flour tortillas, like store-bought flour tortillas, because who has time to sit there and make them from scratch?
I would.
I do.
I had a mix of both cubed up steak and ground beef, and I season my own tacos with plenty of red chili flake and like chili powder, cumin, paprika, all the fucking good stuff, with generous amounts of garlic because my entire family loves garlic.
There's nothing wrong with that.
And real queso we bought at the Hispanic grocery store that we shredded ourselves instead of instead of store-bought shredded cheese, we've almost completely moved away from it.
Honestly, it tastes way better for you to get just any kind of cheese and shred it, because they use not cellulose, but something similar to that. It's made out of sawdust to keep it from sticking together, and so it does taste. It tastes more plain, like it's edible, right? It's fiber,
chalky.
But
it doesn't melt right.
Yeah, it doesn't melt right to get pre-shredded cheese. And like, how long does it take to shred cheese? Like, it does not take that long at all.
That's on my Christmas list. There's this, those barrel style fucking, cheese shredders.
It's like a cheese grinder.
I want one of those, the non-electric kind, the one that just kind of like, turn the crank, because, that way you can kind of control the shreds. I grew up with this neat little device called a salad shooter, they don't make them fuckers anymore.
Salad shooter?
So basically the idea is it's kind of like one of those barrel style cheese graters, but it has an electric motor, so you just turn it on and you just feed the shit in there, and you could, it was small enough that you could just, kind of like grate the cheese freshly onto a salad, but it was never used that way. I used it to, to grate like whole blocks of cheese for taco night. And that's the way that I grew up with tacos corn tortillas fried. And then Colby cheese or whatever, we're Northern Michigan people. So we didn't have real cheese. We got our cheese from Wisconsin. That's how I grew up doing tacos. And I want one of those, just the, tabletop ones that I could just go through and do that. I'm not going to be eating a whole lot of anything really. So I want to make everything that I make really good. Like, it's gotta be flavorful. Don't cut any corners. Like, you've gotta get as much nutrition and flavor out of like a cup full of food as you possibly can. So it's important to me.
That's where my love of cooking comes from, is when I'm going to eat something that I can't eat on diet, I'm going to make it as good as fucking possible.
Yeah.
That's why I don't eat like normal fast food. I'll eat something close to fast food, but like, I don't want to waste that on fast food,
Right. You gotta take some pride in your cooking, and don't cut any corners. Cause I mean, that's one of the reasons why we're a very big country. We cut a lot of corners. We go to Burger King a whole lot more than we should. But I still miss Whataburger, but that's a whole different story,
Right.
I miss Whataburger because it's not here. It's not an option.
Or Arnold's or Savastano's.
Yeah, I had some out of town people from work come, and they're from way down south, from El Paso, and we've got some decent Mexican food here, but El Paso Mexican food might be sacrilege to some. Honestly, the best I've had in the country comes from El Paso, because like, I might have said it here, but there's a whole bunch of Mexican restaurants that came from Juarez, because Juarez got too dangerous and they're getting robbed. And so they just came across the border and just posted up in El Paso, and those restaurants are fire. So, Savastano's was where I took them this week, actually. And they don't have anything, it's Chicago style, but it's not as, I'm sure there's more authentic Chicago style places, right? Tulsa, Oklahoma is not necessarily where you go, but it is really good. We all three vouch for Savastano's. And we got the landfill, which is the meatiest meat pizza, period. And I can tell you that we came away pretty stuffed. It was pretty good stuff.
I'm full just thinking about it.
I was so
just really good pizza.
Yeah, I had a bag of peanuts for lunch, and then I ate three slices of Savastano's that night. Mm. And then I kind of like keto-fied it a little bit because we still had some pizza left over, and they let me take the pizza home. So I brought it to work and then just slid the toppings off the crust and ate that for lunch. Mm. I'm not ashamed of it at all. It was delicious. Even reheated, it's delicious. It is so good. But yeah, I've mostly been working and playing video games. You guys been up to anything? All right, well, I mean, I guess there is something cool of note. So my mom was trying to get rid of some of the, more of my dad's stuff. And so you guys know what a hasty bake is?
I've heard of it.
So it's about $1,100 to $1,200 smoker / grill.
Yeah.
And my dad had it a year before he passed. So the crazy thing is he had an old one that he trashed, and then a neighbor of theirs really liked my dad and bought him a brand new hasty bake for his birthday in 2023. And so he'd been using it for exactly a year. My dad took care of stuff, right? So I smoked a turkey on it for Thanksgiving and some green bean casserole, and it was pretty damn good. But I took that home the other day. Me and my brother loaded it up on his truck and brought it out here. And first thing I made, did a decent job. I didn't quite get it exactly how I want. And I think I've thought about this a lot. I smoked a roast to, you know, get poor man's brisket. And what happened is I got busy at work and it got too warm for too long. So when I pulled that, Jason, it was at 210. And I should have pulled it at like 198 or something like that. It's just I got busy at work.
Yeah.
And so I ended up slicing. It was still good, but like it could have been more tender if I'd have pulled it a little bit earlier. But it does smoke good. So I am very excited for that. I was going to use it again today, but it's just I was too busy and we had to podcast. And I didn't want to leave it alone for like 2+ hours. But yeah. Rusty, you done anything interesting besides make cookies?
I mean, so yeah. So basically, I'm you know the guy that everybody calls to cook shit. So I ended up doing the Thanksgiving turkey, which turned out friggin' amazing. You know that the turkey is you know. Properly done when you can take the entire breast off of the bone and you know slice it and it comes out nice and juicy just you know just breaking down the turkey to you know for carving easiest thing that I've ever done like had a you know it was perfect. The only thing I really want to do next year is I want to spatchcock the turkey and dry brine it.
I didn't dry brine mine. I overnight brined it. I forgot I ordered a brine pack off Amazon. Forgot it when I went over to my mom's house and then just made it from scratch because she had all the stuff anyway.
Yeah. My mom's oven is a double oven. So it's basically like one normal oven just cut in half. With two doors. So I was barely able to get the bird in there, in a roaster. I actually had to take the roasting rack out of the roaster because that was too tall for the oven. It's a really tight fit. But if I spatchcocked it, I can place that on a flat pan. And, you know, roast that over vegetables. And it would be, you know, flattened out so that it would all cook evenly. And you know, and if I dry brined it, then I would get a good crispy skin on that too, which is, you know, something that I couldn't do in her oven this year. So the skin wasn't great, but the meat was perfect. So I'll just have to chalk that up. But yeah, Thanksgiving went off without a hitch. Did all that. And then just yesterday, we have a, you know, yearly tradition where we do an absolute ass load of sugar cookies. We start pumping out sugar cookies at, you know, at like 7 o'clock in the morning, and they didn't get done baking the sugar cookies until about 4 in the afternoon. And then we have to decorate them and, you know, and a bunch of all this stuff. So my job for the sugar cookies is to make the frosting. So, I was over a mixer mixing friggin', you know, frosting up all day long. I was snorting some powdered sugar. I'll tell you, we went through 20 pounds of powdered sugar.
Holy shit. Like, how many cookies were there?
There was
hundreds.
Hundreds.
How many people were you making them for?
Well, the extended family up here. So it's like, there was, I don't know, probably like 10 or 12 households that were getting
cookies. Oh, households. Gotcha.
Yeah. So, like, yeah, it's the whole extended family comes up and they all become, you know, they all, you know, sit down to decorate their own cookies. So it's basically, you know, just the plain baked sugar cookies go out and everybody just, you know, decorates them. But I have to come up with all the fucking colors and flavors for the, the frosting, and people are like, I want more, you know, red. I want more green. I want more blue. Make it fucking self. it's a thing. But I last time I did this, I couldn't do it last year because I had COVID. But the year before, I came up with a recipe for. So this frosting is basically Crisco and powdered sugar, right? It has a little bit of, you know, a little bit of liquid in there, like a little bit of water just to get it to, you know, to combine, or milk, to get it to combine. But it's basically just Crisco and powdered sugar.
Gotcha.
It's a fairly basic, but it's also a really good, you know, frosting. Nobody in my family had ever tried, you know, adding cocoa, you know, to it. So, like, I came up with the first chocolate frosting, you know, in my family, using that same recipe. And so 2 years ago, first chocolate, sugar cookie frosting. This year, I added booze.
Holy shit.
Yeah. So, when I first got there, I looked over and I saw mom had a bottle of peppermint bark rum chata, sitting on the counter. And I'm like, I'm going to use that. I'm going to make a batch and it's just going to be like that, but it's going to, you know, I'm going to flavor it with peppermint bark rum chata. And that turned out to be such a big hit that half of the cookies have, you know, booze in the frosting. And remind you, these are going to households and the households have children in them. So I had to make a very specific color for the boozy ones so that they didn't get in the kids' hands.
That's funny.
But
are they alcoholic after breaking them? Are they alcoholic after baking them?
No, it's in the frosting, so it doesn't bake out.
Oh.
Yeah, so it's not a lot. Like, I make, a good, maybe 3 or 4 pounds worth of frosting, and it has maybe 2 shots worth of rum chata in it. It's just enough to flavor it, right? So it's not like super boozy, otherwise it'd be soup. I made too much of that. So I have an entire container of chocolate rum chata icing, and I have no idea what I'm going to do with it. But it's not going to go bad because it's not going to go bad right away because it's Crisco powdered sugar and rum chata. It's like, it's shelf staple. So, I'll figure something out, but that's a problem to have right there. Some rum chata icing. I have to get all of my sugar rush in now between now and December 25th, because I go on a super strict you have to eat certain very specific foods diet from that point on. So yeah. So
live up the holidays, buddy.
Yeah, this is the last hurrah of having whatever the hell I want before shit gets real. So there's I've had some fun. It's been exhausting. Like the last couple weeks have been real fucking exhausting. So I'll be ready for a little bit of a break. But,
well, that all giantly segued away from what I was about to say was I did tacos for my parents, but then had to turn around Thursday and do a full spread similar to Rusty. Thursday, woke up like 5 a.m. Thanksgiving morning, started roasting a 12-pound turkey and cooking all things to go with it to take up to my wife's mom's house. And she said she was going to cook turkey, which upset all my children because the last 2 years she's cooked turkey, it's been dry.
Your wife's not in the room right now, is she?
No, she's
not. Obviously not.
But even after the kids pointed that out, my wife was like, well, my mom's so stressed out right now, I don't know if she's going to cook a turkey or not. So, yeah, go ahead. Why don't you go ahead and roast a turkey? So that was my wife's way of agreeing with the children about my mother-in-law's dry bird without agreeing with my children about my mother-in-law's dry bird.
I mean, So, like, my grandfather owned a tamale restaurant. He's very Hispanic, right?
Yeah.
But he can't make a turkey to save his life. And so there are many years that my dad took over and smoked a turkey. And, of course, that's why I continued that tradition. It's like, oh, yeah, Grandpa, you don't have to cook anything. And not only did I brine it the night before, but I inject that with garlic butter. The day of, and it was spatchcocked. And I'm going to tell you, that sucker was fucking splashy. I had a handful of leftovers, basically like the dark meat that for whatever reason people don't want. Like there were no legs, there were no wings, there was nothing. There was enough for like 2 servings of turkey afterwards, and I took all of it because I brought Ziploc bags for leftovers. But that bird was gone. It was a 20-pound bird, and we devoured that thing, like, completely. Yeah. It was gone before the sides were.
Yeah, if I were going to smoke a turkey, I would brine it and everything. But my wife made this decision like Tuesday night. So we stuck it in our fridge. Like, she stuck it in the fridge Wednesday morning. So by the time, so it wasn't thawed Wednesday night.
Oh, shit. Oh, no.
To be able to even like brine for 6 hours. So, I just left it in the fridge. And what I ended up doing was I just ended up, adding, an additional 45 minutes to the cook time. And basically that 45 minutes, I basically slow roasted the turkey. So I roasted it at 275. So that first 45 minutes was just to finish the thawing process. And then I had to, like, the outside was somewhat kind of thawed when I started, but, you know, inside it was still solid blocks of ice, so much so that I couldn't pull, like, the neck and the gizzards out.
Yeah, when I...
So...
We spat.
So that first 45 minutes was just to thaw it so that I could pull everything out of it.
When I my mom put that bird in the fridge on Monday afternoon. And yeah. Wednesday night, I went there to spatchcock it and see and put it in the brine, right? And even then, like, I spatchcocked it, right, pulled out the bone, and then, like, flattened it out, and it was still had frozen chunks of ice inside in the, you know, the giblets.
Mm-hmm.
Were still pretty frozen, and I was like, well, it's a good thing we're spatchcocking it, because, like, this would have been still pretty frozen even if we threw it on the smoker. But spatchcocking, like, reduces, like, 2 hours off the cooking time.
Yeah, because you don't have the bones in it, right?
Well, it's because it's flattened out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You don't have a whole lot of mass there, so you can...
It doesn't have that cold core.
All spatchcocking is just taking the spine out and flattening it out.
Yeah. And you got to break the breastbone.
Yeah. You break the breastbone, but...
So, but either way, I mean, the turkey still ended up excellent. I think actually what ice content was left in it just helped, since I was cooking it on a lower heat in that first 45 minutes, was to help finish it thaw. So there was extra liquid in there for it to work with. And basically after it thawed, I just put it back in the oven, uncovered it as Rusty and I usually do, you know, like, loaded up with broth and butter and an apple sealing the large ass fucking hole in the bird.
I know some tip, if you smoke a turkey, just take foil. You don't cover it, but you do take foil and cover the ends of the drumsticks and the wings so they don't get too crispy and it comes out perfect. And then baste it every hour. I basted it with rosemary and thyme butter about every hour. I just go out there and paint some of that on there. Like, I'm telling you, like, I should make another one of these for when we do a game day. Get a small turkey and smoke that sucker. Like, oh my God. Jason, you don't even understand. It's so good.
Oh, I understand. I've had smoked turkeys in the past, but you're much better than most at just improvising fucking spices and shit. So yeah, there's that. But oh, I love smoked turkey. I just didn't. The decision was made so late for me to have to roast one that I didn't have time to smoke it, because I would have had to start.
I started
I don't spatchcock it. I would have had to start smoking it almost the night before.
I ended up being at my mom's house at 6 in the morning on Thanksgiving, and then got it on the grill by about 6:30. Like, I had her, like, I have a chimney that I use for fire, right? So I just loaded that up and had fire starters and was like, so light this at 5:30. And when I got there at 6, I had, you know, lit coals that I put in there, and actually made a pretty big mistake too. I'm not real used to cooking on a hasty bake. I'm used to my smoker. And I dumped hot charcoal all over their wood deck and had to put that out rather quickly. So I had to start from scratch again, but thankfully I'm pretty fast at building a fire. and the smoker was still pretty warm, so it did not take long for it to get going again. But yeah, I'll tell you, that Hasty Bake, bro, that thing is amazing. And it did not, like I said, realistically, it smoked from about 7:30 to about 11 o'clock. And that's all the time it took, 3.5 hours. And it was perfect, like absolutely perfect. But Foodcast aside, everybody here been playing some kind of video game, right?
No, I have not played any video games at all. Not a one.
What are those?
Jason, you...
video games? What?
Jason, you've been actually playing a lot of stuff. Jason, I feel like Jason's actually getting ahead of me on everything right now.
I mean...
Which is somewhat abnormal.
I mean, not really. It's all a smokescreen. I mean, I basically just, like, played Vampire Survivors and Stalker while I was...
I think you might actually be further in Stalker than me, though.
The whole Thanksgiving week. Yeah, I've almost mainlined the entire campaign.
I did.
Yeah, you beat it, Jason beat it, or almost beat it, and I'm like maybe halfway through. I might have the most time, though.
I've got one mission left.
Yeah.
So.
I'm done. I finished.
But that game stresses me out, so I had to play it in small chunks.
Why does it stress me out?
I'm curious because...
I don't know why it stressed me out. It just...
It's because that you're mainlining it and you're, like, way undergeared?
Probably.
But
I was trying to finish it or at least get most of it done before Indiana Jones came out. And, like, I had, like, a whole 2 weeks behind you because... I basically had to wait for that big ass patch that came out before Thanksgiving. Plus the
That workaround that I posted in our private thread.
Plus that workaround for it to really, really play smoothly for me. Like I could finally consistently play it for more than an hour at a time before it freaked my PC out and my frame rates start going everywhere. So that was also part of the stress out, was like for that first 2 weeks it was out, I was basically, I get a good high, good, decent, consistent frame rate over 70 frames a second, but that would only last for about 30 minutes. And then it would start bugging the fuck out, and my frame rate would start going everywhere. I think part of it was a memory link leak, though they didn't say specifically in the patch notes that there was. I think there may have been a little bit of a one, but there was also just a lot of stability to the engine that they patched in that big patch. And then that post from that news article you posted with the workarounds to improve initial loading time really helped too. That cut like 20 minutes of load.
It was taking that long?
Almost.
Jesus Christ. It takes me about 45 seconds to start load shaders for me.
Yeah, about that for me.
Yeah, but you gotta remember, I'm still running that 9900K.
I feel like it's hard drive based.
A couple months ago.
Yeah, but a couple months ago was before Stalker came out, sir. You need to experience that shader caching on 9900K.
It doesn't need to.
Granted, 20 minutes is probably an exaggeration. That's probably realistically more 10, but it felt like 20.
It take 10 minutes for you to load into the game?
Yeah.
Holy shit.
That's pretty crazy.
That's super crazy.
Now, I don't know if it was taking that long before the big patch after the big patch, because I'd already done your workarounds before the big patch dropped. that fixed all the frame rate consistency. So yeah.
Sitting here trying to find my hours played. I want to say I'm at about 90 hours played. Like, the way that I play that is get main mission, do main mission and area, then go around looking at all the points of interest and looking for loot and taking on creatures and things, right? And then looking for caches, right? And then sometimes discovering weird side missions while I'm doing that. Then trucking all that loot back, selling it and going back out, and then eventually just like upgrading all my stuff for that area and then moving on. So every area, I'm just like grabbing everything. In Cordon, that area is actually from the first game, or maybe it was the second game. I can't remember. It was one of the old games. And that's why there's not a main mission there. It's just like kind of an homage to the older games. But there are side missions there, and there are side missions that take you there too. But I finally, man, it took me probably 50 hours before I finally felt confident fighting stalkers or multiple stalker or stalkers, bloodsuckers. At a time, a bloodsucker is an invisible enemy that runs up to you, gives you bleed damage, sometimes stuns you, sometimes knocks you over, and then runs away and then comes back and does the same thing over and over and over again until you learn to sidestep them, until you learn to like just unload. And the early shotguns just don't unload enough.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get, as part of the story, you get the Sega shotgun. And that Sega shotgun is a magazine-fed 9-shot shotgun that'll fire as fast as you pull the trigger. And you can sidestep and just unload into those suckers. And then you start getting assault rifles with laser sights that also you can mag dump into them with that. And that also helps. Like, you don't worry about like headshots of those guys. It's just about mag dumping into them. And now I don't. Like, I went and, like, started going through areas where I had issues, right, before when I didn't have amazing gear, right? It's not that I have amazing gear. I have a SIVA D suit, which is pretty fucking good. That's mostly almost max upgraded. And now I'm going into all those, like, weird dungeon areas that have multiple bloodsuckers and just taking them on. Because I know I can at least absorb the fight, right? Like, I can carry multiple artifacts finally. And I know that I can mag dump on those guys. But I'm just exploring the world. Like, it's the perfect game for me when I'm talking to my girlfriend. Like, I can stop doing the main mission for a second. So, like, I'm still exploring a big area. And then when I'm not talking to my girlfriend or I'm not doing something where it's real specific, then I'll follow the main plot. I like that game a lot. It's had its issues, though. Like, I was telling Rusty the other night. It's playing this area called the, I want to say it's called the Mind Screw, that's over by Cordon. And there's a big dungeon there. And not just me, but a lot of people, when you get to the end of the dungeon, there's a tunnel that goes down so that you can get out, essentially, which actually turns into a whole bunch more fighting. But when you go down that tunnel, for the longest time, it would just use up a crazy amount of resources and crash it out. Like, it would get up to like 36 gigs of RAM in use, and my machine was like, and then it was just like freeze up and lock out. So, but that's been patched. I actually did a support ticket trying to get that fixed, and they responded back, "Did the latest patch fix your issue with the mind screw?" And I was like, "Yeah, actually it did." Thank you for responding. Because for a while it was just like, fuck this area. I'm going to go back on my save, go do everything and just leave this for last. I still have one quest that's just like bug that won't get out of my thing. Like, it's a testament to the game that even with the amount of bugs and crashes and things that I've had with it, I've still had this much fun and still dealt with it. I'd like to see that AI 2.0 come into play, and I think all of us have read about that. Essentially, like, everybody in the game world, monsters and people alike, are all kind of going and completing objectives on their own and doing their own thing. I think what it does right now is it spawns people in your local area to do things. Is that about right, Rusty?
Yeah, that's kind of what's going on. So, ship will spawn in, like, immediately behind you. You know, you turn around and then you have, like, a squad coming down your, you know, on your ass. And that's not how it's supposed to be. It's supposed to be, you should be able to see those things coming from a mile away. And yeah, you're not going to have like packs of dogs just kind of like spawning up your asshole.
Well, it's an kind of annoying. Like I'll be going through a POI. Like there's this one POI in the second area, the garbage, right? Mm-hmm. And there's this huge base in the garbage that's like a compound with complete with like guard towers and upstairs and downstairs and different sections. And if I need cash, usually I go over there because something has spawned in and I can go take out all the soldiers, right? And then I've been trying, until last night, there was one specific cache that I didn't find. And then I found out it had one of those like, cyborg Shreks or whatever they are. Mm-hmm. It's like Shrek in a hoodie that can like force levitate machine guns and shoot them at you. And he's in the basement of that area. And I hadn't had the stones to go there and take him out, but I've got something called the Trophy Hunter, which is a Ventar, which is a silenced assault rifle, but that particular one has laser sight and a red dot. And I found a whole bunch of expansive ammo for it. So I went down there and mag dumped that motherfucker and took him out last night and felt really good about it. Because I didn't know that was what was down there. I thought it was just a bunch of bloodsuckers. And I was like, I'm going to finally clear this out and see what's down here. Not really anything particularly great down there. It was a pretty average stalker stash, to be honest with you. But I did finally take him out. That is another thing I'd like to see them fix, is like more good rewards for stalker stashes. Though some of them are really good. And that's where I got that Trophy Hunter. I was just out wandering the wasteland, essentially, and found this little bunker. Found a stash in there, and it happened to have this like legendary level Ventar with adjusted stats and a couple of different itemizations on it that none of the other ones have. Right. Like the penetration's like level 3 on that thing, and that plus expansive ammo is just like you mag dump once and things are just get erased. Like it's so good, and super accurate. Like you can basically just hold down the trigger and it just barely moves. So you can just mag dump stuff and just take it out. But yeah, like there was one, I was exploring around an area and there was this anomaly that was real high up. And then I like dropped into a gorge, and then in the gorge was one of those gravitational anomalies, except it shot me straight up. And this was completely by accident. So I dropped down trying to get to a ledge to explore way down in this gorge that's kind of underneath this town. So I was like, you know, I'll just save and then see what's down here. And then it hit an anomaly I didn't see, which shot me up into another gravitational anomaly, this huge one that I've been seeing for a while. And I was like, what's that all about? Well, that teleported me a mile away on top of a ledge that had a safe that had like an armor schematic in it. So, you know, because you get blueprints for certain things too that unlock that, you know, enhances it. And I was like, well, that was really interesting. Now I'm way the fuck away in the garbage heap. Like, I don't know what to do now. I guess I'm just going to go looking for more stashes. That's how I play that game. And that's why I've got like 80 hours in it. And I'm halfway through the story. But I've liked the story. You know what it feels like? And then you guys can correct me. It's kind of like open world Half-Life meets Stalker meets Fallout. Like, it has like really strong Half-Life vibes sometimes. And it's reasonably well acted. I don't know. I really like this game, even with bugs. I really like Stalker 2.
Oh yeah, it's super good.
It's all right. I mean, it's all right. But I went through it, right?
I think you beat it in like 60 hours or something, right?
Yeah. I mainlined it, that's for sure. It's very good. I ran into a bit of just hoofing it fatigue, I think, is the best way to put it. Because you're running here and you're running there and you're going here and you're going, and there's very little fast travel.
Right? Yeah, you got to spend like 1,000 to 2,000 coupons to fast travel, and it's only between major settlements that you've discovered the guide for.
Right. And it's just like, I don't know, man. It's one of those, it's one of those things, like, Yeah, I get it. It makes total sense in the game, but that in addition to how big the fucking world is.
Oh, it's a big world.
That after a while, you just hate swamps. Like, swamps.
The swamp that's in the bottom right-hand corner, I was really done. There's not, like, a lot of good things there, and there's a lot of mutants, and there's a whole lot of very little, like, ammo to be found there. And a lot of psi anomalies, and, like, it's just pain. Yeah, that whole area, like, swamps in video games just suck. Swamps in Dark Souls 1 also sucked.
Yeah, true. Basically, that particular area sucked. There's a few places that were just I didn't necessarily like all that much. But I mean, I'm not supposed to love everything about this video game. I think it's just this. You know, it added an extra layer of God, I've got to deal with this. You know, to the game, and that made it had a challenge, and I just ran into a situation with the random fucking spawns that were, you know, that always happen at the most inopportune time. Here's a quest you gotta, here's this request you gotta go do 2,000, kilometers in that direction. And then you have to, hoof that fucking thing 2,000 kilometers back. All of your, all of your other Radiant style fucking, quests are in 2,000 kilometers in the opposite fucking direction. And I'm like, oh God, all right. If I want to make money on quests, which is not worth doing at all.
But to me,
just go kill shit.
To me, the quest is a direction to get loot. And then after I've done the quest and picked up all the loot, the loot that's worth it from the people you took out, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then it's, do I have enough weight room, right? And one thing that really helped me and really frustrated Rusty is I found something called Weird Water. Mm-hmm. And it adds like 50 pounds to your carrying capacity. It's ridiculous. But when you get over 50 total pounds in your inventory, you get the drunk effect, which basically means you need laser sights or a shotgun. But that aside, you can carry a lot of shit with that. And for me, it was just, I watched like one of those tip videos on like what artifacts were actually good. Cause I was like, man, all these artifacts have a lot of drawbacks. What am I playing this wrong? I was like, no, I'm just like scouring an area and I have like shit mercenary armor that has two slots, and so I've got enough to keep like one weak anti-radiation artifact plus one weak carry weight artifact. And so then I found a better suit of armor essentially, right? That had more slots. That had one, like I found a compass early on, which apparently is a pretty good artifact. And then I found that weird water, or I'd watched that thing. It's like, oh yeah, if you run across this, like it'll spawn around this central area. Like, just look where the lights are flashing. And when you get into the weird light anomaly, whole screen goes black except for the lights that are kind of flashing and bouncing up and down. They do a fuckload of damage. But occasionally, under one of them, close to one of the ridges, it'll spawn that artifact. And every emission, so there's a thing that's called an emission, and they use it to, I think, wipe the server of junk, like just things that are laying around in the wasteland.
Mm-hmm.
It respawns creatures, and it respawns artifacts. So, like, at one point, I had four weird balls. The weird ball, like, if you're standing still, like, helps you absorb bullets, essentially. It just gets heavier every time you get shot, but really good when you're sniping or, you're surrounded. So anyways, like, yeah, I just went up there. I ran into this anomaly. I was like, I wonder what that is. Turned it out to be that anomaly. I was like, oh yeah, I saw a video on that a couple days ago. Just going to go hunting. And like 2 minutes later, I find it. Then Rusty, you spent like an hour and a half trying to find that stupid thing.
Fucking almost two hours of my 60 hour playthrough is running around underneath those goddamn lights.
Yeah. I
even came back after emissions. Like I went did the thing, you know, had an emission happen. I went back, ran around, and I'm like, still can't find it, you know, wrote it off. And then another emission, or another couple emissions happened, and I just happened to be close by, and I'm like, fuck it, let me see if I can go find it. Because, like, the area, I mean, the area in which you find it doesn't move. It's just, you know, you just go to that spot and just have to deal with the anomaly, right? But I could not, like, that wasn't the only one, but I couldn't find Weird Water. And there's a number of different, like, you know, I want to say, like, they're legendary anomalies where you can get these weird artifacts. I was only able to, you know, successfully complete two of them.
Did you ever get a compass?
I did not. I might, like,
it's a for, you know, we're talking in like code. It's what it feels like. So the compass gives you its maximum radiation, but also maximum defense. And then you slot it in one of the like protected anomaly slots in your suit. But it's really good. Like, I don't know how many times I've survived because I've got that stupid thing on.
Yeah, it's just it was just like there's certain things about that just didn't seem right. A lot of the, you know, the random anomaly, you know, stuff. It was fun hunting them down, but a lot of it is trash. But every so often, you would find something like a compass or something like that in them.
Yeah,
so
when
it
you
made
get
it worth doing.
When you get that tracker, that anomaly tracker that just has a big circle of green lights, to me, yeah, that's the easiest one to use. Like, once I got that, like, every time I'm close to anomaly, I pull it out because, like, I've got 100% success rate with that thing. With the other ones, it's way harder to find anomalies.
There's actually, you know, that one's the easiest one to get, you know, relatively early on. And yeah, there's a couple other trackers that are, you know, that are good.
Yeah. The first one you get enough. Just blinks faster when you're closer, but doesn't give you a direction as to where it's at. And then the second one I got was literally just, it would show the distance to it, but like wouldn't show the direction. And it's like it updates slow. So it just took forever.
There's a couple, but the one that you're talking about kind of looks like a big antenna in your hand.
Yeah.
That one will pick up an artifact a mile away. It's meant to, you're meant to carry around the, you know, the antenna one if you're hunting for artifacts, and then swap it over to one of the other trackers to fine tune it.
Oh, I should stop selling those when I find them. I just see an anomaly and I'm just like, all right, well, popping out the anomaly thing.
Yeah.
I don't really hunt them. I just, if I see lots of anomalies, I'm like, there's probably something over here.
Yeah, it's worth doing. I just, there's certain things that will eventually be fixed that, you know, or had been fixed, but a little too late for my playthrough, that made the game feel a little lopsided. The economy was really fucked, for like the first week.
Yeah, because you would go out on a run and come back, and it would cost you more to repair your stuff than you might make 10,000, right? But it might cost you 15,000 to repair. So at a certain point, I was like, I hope I found a suit of armor, and I'm not going to upgrade anything. I just had like 10 broken suits of armor in my inventory.
Yeah, and it was pretty crazy. Like, I got to the point where I had to play super stealth, long range, headshots only, you know, so that I didn't take any damage, and I didn't use any special special ammo because it was chewing through the durability on all my weapons, you know, way too fast for me to actually do anything with them. So it was, you know, I was relegated to single shot weapons at medium to long range, just so I didn't take any damage, and then I would sell literally everything, and it was just barely enough to be able to, you know, repair and maybe do a upgrade. It was nuts. They did fix the economy, you know, and it is better, but upgrading still costs an arm and a leg. I think it's kind of meant to, you're supposed to like really commit to a, you know, a weapon or a piece of armor if you're going to upgrade it that far. But, I felt like there was not enough differences in the weapons, or they could have used maybe like 10 or 15 more weapons, have other options. There was only really like a couple clear winners, and the rest of them were trash.
What were you using towards the end?
You know, for me, like I was looking for anything that would be able to use 5.56 and 9mm because, like the 9mm in the red box, because that was the most plentiful ammunition. And, you know, there was not a lot of other options. Like, if I wanted to play with some of the other weapons, they're neat and they might do a decent amount of damage, but you just couldn't find the ammo. Even in Stalker stashes, you couldn't find the ammo because it was always either primarily the 5.56 for the, like, the AK weapons, or 9mm for the MP5 style, or Viper 5, or whatever the fuck they want to call it. You know, that was the only two ammo types. You know, so there needs to be a little bit more balance as far as the ammo types is concerned, is my argument.
Yeah, the Ventura uses a 9x19, and that one's pretty... I end up using, I've got a gun that uses that, and I mag dump with it occasionally, but most of the time I single shot with it. Mm-hmm. But I've also built up I still don't have a crazy amount of ammo for it. I want to say I like have about 600 rounds total for that gun. It's just that I'm pretty ammo conservative, and I still run across people with a Ventar. So, you know, I restock maybe 30 rounds, but I'm slowly dwindling down. And when I run into a place where, like, I'm under 200 rounds of that weapon, I'll flip to another weapon until I build up more rounds. So I kind of just rotate through stuff based on how much ammo I have. Because I also have the Clusterfuck, which is it's like a kind of a sniper-style AR platform.
Yeah.
And it's got good penetration, and you can blind fire with it, and it's pretty fucking accurate. It's single shot only, too, and it uses, 5.56, I think. And so, like, I have thousands of rounds of 5.56.
Right.
So I just use that for a while when I'm running low on the other gun.
I got to a point where I was, I just ended up with, it was a late game gun that uses the 5.56 rounds. And I just set that up to be, you know, my main gun. And it had, you know, the ability to either mag dump or single shot, and it had like an ACOG, short range zoom. So it was good enough to take off heads, you know, at some range, but I also could just like run and gun if I had to.
You need the ability to mag dump though, and like, thankfully my shotgun has me covered more or less when I have the Clusterfuck. But, like, yeah, there are a lot of times where, like, you just get swarmed by stuff and you need an automatic weapon to just try to, like, thin the herd. Like, those stupid fucking rats, man. Like, they just swarm your ass.
Yeah.
Or, you know, you got more than one stock or one bloodsucker. Like, you definitely need to start messing with an automatic weapon.
I don't know. I always hit them on the shotgun. There's some really good shotguns late game, so look for some of the for something like that, and don't be afraid to drop a shotgun, the one that has the clip, or something that you you load one at a time, because getting the shots out faster can mean, you know, make a lot of difference. You'll end up getting a shotgun for a quest if you do the arena.
I'm in that close to that area. That's where I'm selling everything right now, is that area by the arena.
Yeah. Do the arena quest, you'll get a decent shotgun. And that was the one that carried me almost through to the end game.
Yeah. You were telling me about it when you got it, and then you were having a lot of trouble with that final arena quest.
Yeah, so that was one of the things that they fixed in the thing. The final arena quest, you end up going up against a dude.
It's like armored to the teeth, right?
Yeah, armored to the teeth, and they didn't give you nearly enough bullets. Like, I was, you know, I was pinging the dude in the head with every bullet, and I ran out of bullets, and I ended up having to finish him off with my knife, because I didn't have enough bullets, and there wasn't any more bullets to be had anywhere in the arena. And I would just wait for him to mag dump. When he's reloading, I'd run up and swipe him a couple times with my knife and run hide behind a pillar.
That's funny.
This is the only way I was able to kill him. It's not meant to be, you know, he's not meant to be that big of a bullet sponge. And I think, you know, I think they got the message. And you end up starting with more bullets now, you know, for that fight. So it's possible to kill him with, you know, nothing but bullets. So that's, you know, that's comforting to, you know, to see, right? But, you know, it is very much, you know, they're doing little tweaks. You know, it's a good game, but there's a couple things that I noticed. Like, I went from, you know, from Stalker 2 to playing, you know, a little bit of Cyberpunk. And it's kind of a night and day difference between the two. In Stalker than, you know, than Cyberpunk, but there's better, like, The guns feel better in Cyberpunk, even though they're kind of futuristic and weird, than they did in Stalker. So it's just a thing. I look at Stalker 2 as kind of like the open world version of Metro.
To me, it's like if Far Cry was good.
yeah. If they had a little bit more tweaking to the weapons, I think they could have done a bit better with the weapons. But alas, that's what they gave us, and, you know, it works.
There was a lot of people thinking that it was going to be too easy of a game or too modernized, and it feels very similar to old Stalker, so...
Oh, yeah. That, I mean, if you do a side-by-side comparison of the original Stalker to this one, like, the areas look damn near identical.
I'm just talking about the feel of the game.
Graphics. Huh?
I'm just talking about the feel of the game. It's like every moment you're in some sort of danger, you know?
Yeah, well, it's all calculated risk, and you have to make sure that you are, you know, you have enough inventory space and take enough ammo with you to be able to do a thing. Because, I mean,
and not
like the fact that ammo actually carry, you know, has weight to it. So that you have to make that decision. And like, okay, you can't just carry fucking 16 guns with you with all the ammo just stuffed in your magic fucking hole of a pocket that has no weight to it. No, I'm like, I think 300 rounds will be enough for this run, you know?
I usually go with 200 rounds for my rifle, unless it's single shot. Like, if it's, I'm using one of the sniper-style rifles, I'll take 100 rounds. Mm-hmm. And then I take about 75 rounds for my shotgun with some slugs, like about 25 slugs, just in case I run into something that I need to use slugs for. And that usually carries me because I end up picking up ammo.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Is if I come back from a run and, you know, have more ammo than I did, you know, when I left, perfect. And I'll just go ahead and just add that to the stash. But yeah, it's a good game. I don't think it's the absolute best, but and it's a little rough around the edges. I did have some crashes. I did get teleported into the Nether, and
yeah, there's a desktop. I haven't played it since the very latest patch, but there's a place called the Death Cave, and mild spoiler, there's a controller in there, and that controller, once you get to the end, there's a Ventar over there, a special Ventar. And again, the Trophy Hunter is the better version anyway. But at the end of that cave, there's a bunch of Psy effects, and the Psy effects spawn ghosts, basically, that can attack you. So you have to take a Psy blocker, which helps with that. And then there's a bunch of gravitational anomalies, and the controller will warp you to him and then warp you back. And because he's warping you through like three of those gravitational anomalies, it was causing a memory link and just crashing my game every single time.
Yep. It's kind of rough.
And so like stuff like that is what's holding it back from greatness right now in my mind. But yeah. Like the execution of that and the AI thing is what's holding it back. But like as it stands right now, very solid 4.5. It's now my second favorite game of the year. It was my first favorite game of the year because I will say Veilguard, I've just fell off really hard. I'm going to finish it after I finish the Stalker and play some Path of Exile because I did buy a Founder's Pack. I'm in a good place financially. So I was like, you'd mentioned that, and I was like, I'm going to buy that, and I download it, and I realized it was 85 gigs, but yeah, like, I'm going to play some Path of Exile, I'm going to finish Diablo, I'm going to finish Stalker, and I'm going to finish Indiana Jones, which, I don't, have any of you fuckers played that?
No.
Jason, what's the timer say now?
Have I played what?
Indiana Jones.
No.
What's the timer at right now?
Still at 3 hours and 16 minutes.
We'll be finished before then, so you will get time in.
Yeah. I am super excited for that game and from everything you've said.
I'm a big Indiana Jones fan. It is one of the few movie posters I have in my house. The first three movies in my mind are like they're my favorites of all time, right? I don't know if they're some of the best movies of all time, but there's just certain traits about those movies that are pretty timeless. They kind of feel like throwbacks to like old Saturday night, you know, Saturday matinees, right? Mm-hmm. From way back when. Harrison Ford's execution delivery of the lines, the dry, sarcastic humor, the always like getting by the skin of his teeth kind of thing, right? The fact that he's like clumsy as hell and just barely escapes everything. Just the general, like, hokey archaeology thing, right, with the fight against fascists and Nazis. Very clear, like, lines of good and evil in the movies. And then you had Crystal Skull, which was pretty meh, right? Like, on its own, it was an okay movie, but, like, compared to the other three movies, it was pretty blah. And then I just won't even see the newest one just because, like, it's – they can't recapture those first three movies, and they've tried twice now, and it also didn't get very universal acclaim. It's really hard to get that back, and I just let the franchise die. Like, those first three movies are solid as hell. Like, just leave it alone.
Yeah, I mean, the last movie wasn't that bad. Was it still as good as the first three movies? No, it did get pretty close to Temple of Doomish. There's no saving Crystal Skull as far as the mythos goes. And is it still a fun movie to watch? Yes.
Yeah, but how old is Harrison Ford now? Like, you just
think he's in his 80s.
I'm pretty sure he's in his 80s, and he was in his 40s when those movies came out. So here's what Indiana Jones and the Great Circle is. Without, I'm not going to give any spoilers. I am a massive whale, and it was not working on the early access version of Game Pass, so I bought the stupid expensive version on Steam. My last like big game purchase for the year, so there's that. But here's what it is. It's another movie, but it's a game. And what I mean by that is it's as engaging as any of the original three movies. And tonally, it is very similar to the original movies.
Yeah, it's supposed to take place like between
Temple of Doom
and Raiders of the Lost Ark and Last Crusade, because technically Temple of Doom chronologically takes place before Raiders.
Okay, that's right. So anyway, there's some throwback to Temple of Doom. I already showed you that, Jason. Like, there was a big video kind of showing that they did it like shot for shot, just like the, you know, the contraption where the ball comes down, right? They have that at the very beginning, pretty early in the game, like 20 minutes in, you're playing that scene. So no spoilers there. But they kind of do that to set the mood of like, hey, we're really going for OG Indiana Jones, and it's Machine Games. Like, the guys that made Wolfenstein actually have a story, which is nuts. I always thought the Wolfenstein remakes would just be campy games with a shitload of guns, right? And then they ended up being campy games with a shitload of guns with a story you cared about, right? They did the same thing here, just the guns is not the focus of this game. So essentially what they'll do is I'm only in the second big area. I've only played it some. But it'll set up the story and kind of what you're going for, right? And then when you get to the area, it's like an open world-ish. It's a big level, like a Hitman level, right? Just way bigger than a Hitman level. And there's a bunch of side objectives that you can that make sense to the main story to accomplish. There's no like leveling like an RPG. Well, there sort of is, but not really. So hidden among the level are a bunch of books, and those books help you improve your fist fighting or your stamina, how much health you have, how many bandages you can hold, that kind of stuff, right? But in order to unlock those books, you have to have essentially exploration points. And so the way that you get those points that you need to unlock the books is by discovering points of interest, finding artifacts, advancing plot points, right? Finding like notes, solving clues, solving riddles, like all those things that are like story focused items advance your level. Your combat does nothing for you other than get you from point A to point B. And the combat is most of the time pretty optional. Sometimes it's not. It plays out kind of like a Dishonored, but not as slick. Like Dishonored, right, is your super alpha level assassin. They do a pretty good job with the stealth of like sneaking around and, you know, taking guys out and dragging their bodies behind crates and stuff like that so nobody discovers them. Like everything is a melee weapon. A rake's a melee weapon. A broom's a melee weapon. A bottle's a melee weapon. You know, a trowel is a melee weapon. You can throw all of your melee weapons. You can use your whip to disarm people or pull them towards you. You can lure people into traps. There's very recently a point where I was like restoring power to this area as I was like going through it. And I saw two enemies like sitting in this water next to this coffin. But there was also an electric switch there. And I was about to restore power. And I was like, I wonder what this does. And I throw the switch and it electrocuted the shit out of the guys that were sitting in the water. I was like, well, that was fun. Tonally though, like, they have scripted dialogue for Indy and all the areas that make sense that drives the story forward. There's some people that kind of like companions, just like the movies, right? Like, always had a sidekick of some sort. Like, there's definitely a main sidekick in this game that follows you around in a lot of spots. And there's some dialogue that drives the story forward that is more advanced than like a Last of Us. Like, Last of Us had like some really like heartfelt moments in like the slow points of that game. This has that, but like it's all that witty, sarcastic indie humor. And Troy Baker really sounds like Harrison Ford and really sounds like Harrison Ford's Indiana Jones. His delivery, you know, the facial expressions they give the character, right? The character model. The way the lines are written, the way that the story is written, just it feels like it just fits in with those movies. I'm so engaged with the story. Like, I don't want to play this with the sound off. I don't want to play this with subtitles. The delivery is just spot on. And it's a healthy amount of like Hitman gameplay in that, like the newer Hitmans, you'd find like a disguise, right? And in this game, it's not like you knock somebody out and then you take his clothes. Like, you'll find a disguise kind of as part of a plot device in different areas. So you can carry up to two disguises. So you got your indie outfit, and the indie outfit gives you a little bit of extra stamina. I think it's stamina or armor or something. But anyways, it gives you some better survivability in a fight. But everybody knows that you're Indiana Jones, essentially, right? They all know that you're not supposed to be in the area you're supposed to be in. So, like, in one area, I had a priest outfit, and then I had one of the enemy guard outfits that I found, essentially. And that let me travel through different areas. And then you'll find like a key, and this key fits these types of doors that gives you access to these other areas. And then you've got a camera that, like, you take pictures of things, and that gives you exploration points, right? And it kind of sets it up that so that this one guy can study these artifacts that you use the camera to take pictures of it so he can study them in better detail. But you use that throughout the game to, and it's not just like a free camera mode. You'll see a camera icon pop up on your screen, which means that somewhere close by there's something to take a picture of. And that gives you some of those exploration points. But there's all these like optional dungeons and things that you go through that have their own sets of puzzles, right? Like, there are some combat in those, but most of it is focused around figuring things out. There's a real high focus on just using your brain. So I have this marker board that I use for groceries, like a small magnetic marker board I throw on the side of my fridge that I just pulled into my living room. And I'm using it to make notes on things to help me like crack stuff. I don't want to look up a guide because it's engaging to me to try to figure out the puzzles on their own. Like, there's one I was just doing it where like there's a chest, right? And there's a code, and then there's some notes around it. And the notes were essentially gave me a bunch of dates, right? And then it gave me a cipher. And then it gave me a note that had a message on it. But then they said the delivery day was wrong, so I needed to look at Thursday. But it was Thursday in German. So then I had to, like, figure that out, right? I looked at the other thing, and then that showed what Thursday in German was just based on what day of the week it was. And then that was the cipher that it was supposed to be for that, even though they had the cipher circled on what it should have been. And so, like, you know, through a little bit of, like, minor light puzzle solving, I did that, but I like the fact that I had to use my marker board to figure that out, right? So, like, it's engaging in a good way with that stuff. Like, there's a lot of times you think outside the box. Like, there is one area where I needed a torch to, like there in some of the crypts, there's these areas where you burn down little sections of the wall. It has, like, dry kindling, and then it'll reveal a passage that you can get through. But getting in there was a bunch of water, and it was putting out my torch. Well, I walked around that little catacomb. I found a hole and chucked my torch through the hole and then went through there and then used my torch to get through the thing, right? But yeah, there's a lot of like puzzle solving. There's a lot of like deciphering of clues to figure things out. Like, very, very early in the game, like, you're trying to determine like what artifacts go where, and it's based on the flag that's next to where the artifact is. And then without any context, it would be hard, but when he tells you you're wrong, he tells you what flag it is. So you can start to figure it out. And you can hold the artifact, and then I want to say it's like you hold left trigger, and it'll examine it, and it'll tell you a little bit about that artifact. And you're like, okay, this is where this needs to go. And so, like, all of that stuff's really engaging. And there's some platforming, right? There's some, like, spots where you're using your whip like a grappling hook. Like, there's some physical puzzles, too. But, like, there is another one where you're, like, it's going through the stages of the cross, and there's, like, a whole bunch of, like, things that you're doing in relation to that, moving levers based on the numbers that you're seeing in the blood in these pools, like, which was just kind of neat. And I was like, well, that's really neat. But the the story itself is really well done. Like, I want to say it's better than the last two movies, like, already way better than the last two movies. And, like, it puts it, you know, I don't know what it's going to be like at the end, right? The way that it resolves itself is going to be how I feel about this. But I'm super invested in it because it's super well acted and it's super well written. Like, I'm really invested in Indiana Jones. And this just feels like another adventure from the old time, right? With somebody who looks and talks a lot like Harrison Ford, with, you know, a character that goes with him that feels very much like another one of the sidekicks that are in the movies, because there's always a sidekick in those movies. And there is, like, combat and stuff, right? Like, there's whole sections, right, where you can kind of sneak out of it, or you can kind of, like, fuck up, and now you got to, like, take on, like, five guards, and it's a whole system of, like, dodging around and blocking and countering, and, like, there was a whole section of me finding, like, essentially a fight club that took me forever to win until I figured out the boxing in the first area that I finally got through, and that actually helped me teach me how to box better. But, like, there's just hokey-ass shit, too, that I just like. Like, there was this guy walking around, and I wanted to distract him, so I threw this like, beer bottle, and it broke, but for whatever reason, I guess he just caught me out of the side of his eye, and so he starts charging me, and I picked up, like, a trowel and chucked the trowel at his face, and it knocked him, like, ass over tea kettled off a ledge, and it's like, that was awesome. Because there's all sorts of shit just laying around all over the place that you can just grab and throw. Like, it all breaks really fast. But, like, that's – it's trying to simulate what Indiana Jones – like, he didn't use a gun very often, right? Like, if you use a gun, like, it's kind of a double-edged sword. Like, I've got a revolver with the Indy outfit. You've only got, like, 12 bullets. Once you shoot it, you alert everybody around. It really has to be, like, a last resort thing. Like, I found a machine gun and did the same thing, and it just, like, I've got 20 enemies to fight. And then I lost. You can also hit X and flip it around to be a melee weapon, which is awesome, to take the butt of a machine gun and just, like, pulverize somebody with it. Or take a rake and, like, sweep their legs out from underneath them while their back's turned to you, and then club them over the top of the head with a rake. So, like, yeah, it's a combat – it's an action-adventure game. It kind of has a very similar feel to the Uncharted games, a whole lot less gunfight stuff, but a whole lot of focus on story and puzzle solving, and more focus on story, actually, than Uncharted. I really like this game. I really, really like this game. I thought, you know, there was like a 50-50 shot, this game just sucked ass, right? And, you know, I was hearing like, oh, it's not real combat focused. I really like this game. I'm sad that it doesn't qualify for Game Awards this year. It's easily the best written thing that's come out in a while.
Really? Does it not? Because it came out in December?
Right. If there's a November cutoff date for Game Awards stuff. But yeah, it's really good. Like, I have no, that's all I want to do. And I got to work the whole next week. Right. And then I got to do a whole bunch of picture work the week after. That's the whole reason I spent money on it early. Cause I know, like, basically after Friday next week, like, I don't have any game time for like 5 days. And I wanted to talk about it on a show, really badly. And my gamble was right. Like, you guys, Rusty, you haven't played it yet either, have you?
No. I am waiting for my code.
Oh, because it's going to come out probably in a couple hours. Oh. Yeah, Jason, it's really good, and it's clean enough that you could play it around your kids, more or less, except for the one scene that I showed you, the Temple of Doom scene, right? Like, aside from that, like, that's the goriest thing I've seen all game. It's, you know, it's 1937, right? So, like, there's a lot of damn, a lot of hell. I don't even know that I've heard shit yet, right? There's no fuck anything. It's Indiana Jones, man. Like, it's just good. I could just sit there and watch somebody play it for the story, because it's just good.
Yeah, I can't wait.
I really hope it resolves well at the end. Like, I hope it's not a letdown at the end, because it's just, I don't know. And I'm having a really hard time not spoiling it. I wanted to make sure Jason didn't get it spoiled. I will say it takes a little bit to take off, though. I want to say that it really hit its stride about 5 hours in, but it's really building up the story the first 3 or 4 hours, right? Because you kind of get a feel for what you're supposed to do, and you play it different. I will say you play it a little bit differently than other games. Like some people are like, do main quest to get to area, side quests, Arama, then get back to main quest. Like do main quest until it's pretty clear that you're going to be leaving the area or getting close to that, and then side quest, because like just for the first area, if you do the main quest long enough, you get the first disguise. The first disguise lets you do a lot of the side content a lot easier than being Indiana Jones. Right. And then by the time you find the second disguise as part of a side quest, but it does make some of the other content a lot easier. If you find out that like, oh, I can't be Indiana Jones here, or the other disguise I have, or maybe look around a little bit. But yeah, a whole bunch of like little puzzles to solve all over the place. A lot of like essentially modern point and click adventure as part of the game. And I appreciate that it's not all of that, but there's some of that and it's pretty well, it's not so difficult that you really need to be really good at puzzle games, but it's satisfying that I had to have a separate, you know, if I didn't have a marker board, a separate place to write stuff down, so that I could make decipher what's going on. And I'd recommend not using a guide. Like, I think, you know, if you're reasonably intelligent, you can figure it out. Like, none of it's super hard. It just kind of requires you to think for a second. And I know you guys are both pretty smart, so this, you guys won't have any trouble. But, like, if you're really worried about it, like, just wait a second. You'll figure it out. And I'm pretty sure you can go back to the other areas, though I haven't had a need to because I only had, like, 2 artifacts left. The area that I was in. But yeah, Indiana Jones and the Great Circle. Man, like, that's a 4A game. It's so good. It's so well optimized. I didn't even talk about that, but I only talk about it for a second. Right? I know it says it requires a ray tracing card, which all of us have. But I'm running it out without DLSS, without frame generation, right? Running it at 4K. I'm running it in supreme mode, whatever the fuck that means. But it's past ultra, and I'm running it at 80 frames a second, no upscaling at all. And it's got all of the upscaling options in there, like if you need it. But Jason, you'll be running it in 1080p, so I'd just say try it on like stupid settings and see how it runs. And Rusty,
that's what I'm going to do. I mean, I have a fair bit of confidence that it's going to be optimized better than some of the games that have come out recently.
I've had a couple of crashes. Again, I've played it for about 10 hours. I've had a couple of crashes. It auto saves every couple of minutes. So like you're never too far out. Another cool thing, when it saves and you come back to the game, it's the title screen is right where you were last on where the last auto save was. You hit continue and the game just starts. There's no load time. You can see your character kind of idly animating in the background and then you just hit continue and then you're playing the game. It's id Tech. It's awesome. it's so awesome. And for the people complaining that it looks bad somehow, I don't know what you're smoking. Like, this is a very good looking game and it runs very well. Again, id Tech is, those guys know what they're doing when it comes to optimization.
Yes, they do.
It's how Doom runs at a stupid frame rate. But it's a lot of conversation. Do we want to take a break, guys?
Yeah. Sure.
All right, guys, we'll be back. We're back.
Whoa.
That was a soda can.
I wasn't ready. What the hell's wrong with you?
It's time for news. You weren't ready for another snap on the can.
Yeah, that's right. I just said it. I can't crack a can anymore. Sorry. I'm canless. I'm going to be forever canless. Sad face.
Well,
I can't have carbonation.
I definitely can.
I I'm not supposed to. If I go by what the doctor told me, I'm not supposed to have it forever. So, I'm going to do what the doctor says. I've got a number in my head. I want to make sure that I hit that number. So, I'm going to do what my doctor tells me.
You know how, like, Tencent owns everything?
Yes.
So, their potential, there's shareholders are in talks about possible buyout terms with Tencent. And I don't know how that makes them a better company.
Who? Who is?
What? Ubisoft.
Ubisoft is going to be bought by Tencent?
It's a potential, yeah. Yeah, so I'll read a little clip. Discussions between the two parties are ongoing as Tencent also wants to prevent any potential hostile takeover of Ubisoft by other investors, adding that Tencent's plan is to remain patient and wait for the founding family to agree to the deal, family being the main stakeholders. They said they may not opt to increase its stake in Ubisoft as it considers its current direct holding of almost 10% in Ubisoft sufficient for maintaining its gaming business cooperation with the company. Tencent declined to comment. But, you know, they haven't been doing good. Like, they just haven't released. Again, in my mind, the last decent game they did was Assassin's Creed Valhalla. And Origins was quite a bit better than Valhalla that came out. And these games came out years ago, right? I don't know that they're just listening to their players. And we talk about the Ubisoftification of games, right? Like, there's your tower, you go, you find, you open up the map. Get 3,000 quest markers for a bunch of stuff that's really not that fun. And the main quest is decent, but you keep getting distracted by so much bullshit that has no console. It's like, it's just game bloat. And they make their games for bloat to promote their service, right? And a lot of people don't want to play that. A lot of people don't. People like to finish games of some. And we want to do, like, I'm distracted by shit in Stalker, but I'm enjoying going in and looking through these POIs. Nobody's telling me I have to do it. I'm just doing it, right? Indiana Jones side quests are entirely optional, but they add a lot of flavor to the main quest that's already going on. They're very consequential, too. You don't have to do it. You could mainline the whole thing if you wanted to, but I think the side quests add a lot of extra flavor to the game. Ubisoft side quests are hot garbage, and they have been in Far Cry and Assassin's Creed. And more recently, like, the Star Wars game didn't seem to do quite that well. So they're facing a lot of financial woes.
Yeah, they have their moments. Like, there's one good writer. And you can tell which quests he writes.
Right. The thing about it, too, is, like, the company got so big after the success of Assassin's Creed, right? They had, like, whole offices that were, like, Ubisoft villages where they had, like, 5,000 people making a game so they could turn around an annual IP. And, like, for a big chunk of the Assassin's Creed franchise, like, feels like bloat. Like, you know, Origins was good, and then you got a whole bunch that are pretty inconsequential. You had one that was in France that just basically didn't run. Like, they're all, like, AAA games, but with B-tier writing and gameplay, right? Or C-tier sometimes. And yeah. The same thing happened to Far Cry, right? Like, they are super hit and miss on Far Cry, and I'm sad that they took over that as well. And it's just, you know, they got too big. They got to where it was just a complete commercial enterprise. It's like all the passion got sucked out of Ubisoft in making good games. Like, they used to be pretty good.
Well, they also used to take their time making them instead of actually just serializing them. The thing is
they could have one.
Ubisoft has been hasn't had a good innovation in video games in a long time.
15 years.
And
well, I mean, their last really good ones came with Far Cry 3 and Assassin's Creed 3, but, you know, with that new engine. And that's honestly, the last time they really.
Compared to the modern Assassin's Creed, 3 is pretty good, but they're still chasing Brotherhood, in my opinion. Like, Brotherhood story-wise was on point, gameplay-wise was on point, wasn't overbloated. Brotherhood's where it's at. And, like, when did that come out? Like 2011?
Yeah. Like, I mean, I remember talking about it a long fucking time ago.
Oh, we were high on that game. Like, it was a good game.
Thing is I don't see it, and I've not been able to get into, you know, like, really into any Ubisoft game since. It's either been, you know, like you said, it's very similar. All the games are very, very similar, where you go to a tower, you reveal part of the map, you do some of the quests in that area, you move to the next area, rinse, repeat until you end up with, you know, Big Bad, and then you see credits. That describes the vast majority at a fairly high level. Vast majority of Ubisoft games, you know, since, you know, the beginning of Assassin's Creed. So they haven't changed that. They haven't really moved away from that. They've added little, you know, added little modules to it. But if you strip those modules away, you see that same gameplay mechanic, you know, trope, you know, throughout all of their games. Or at least the vast majority of their games. And that just, it's just feels lazy. And like, I don't want to play the same. I don't want to have that same mechanic in every game.
Right.
So it's just a thing. I want to see more innovation in, you know, in games. I want you to be able to tell the story in a different way. You know, and have it, you know, have it have some impact, some meaning to it. So I don't know. I mean, I can't see, you know, being fully owned by Tencent helping them in any way. What I do see helping Ubisoft is, you know, getting some new creative leads in, you know, in on those teams, and, you know, having some fresh new ideas, you know, and then and getting rid of the framework of what Ubisoft games are known for, and have them do something completely fucking different. They might stumble, they might have a couple bad games out of it, but that's how they learn. They got comfortable and they used the, you know, the same fucking framework on everything, and that's what's killing them. That's what's causing that studio to, you know, that whole fucking studio franchise to fail. It's one of the reasons why I don't like fucking playing Ubisoft games. I see a game and I'm like, oh, I'm halfway to, you know, interested in a fucking, you know, in this concept made by Ubisoft. Well, there goes that idea.
I usually, you know? I wait for a sale and wait for multiple reviews, and I haven't been let down by that process so far. I was waiting on the Star Wars game, right? And yeah, there was a very mixed reviews on that. So I was just kind of like, meh. Didn't lose that. You know, if it comes across my desk at $20 and I don't have anything to play, then I'll give it a shot.
Yeah. I'm worried about more shit going under, you know, going into Tencent. I mean, I know what they're doing, and they're just kind of getting their fingers in the pot of everybody. But I don't want to see Ubisoft and end up like
under control. Here's the thing: the amount of previously independent studios that were purchased by Tencent that have now gone under or just launched, you know, trash after trash
mobile games
is pretty big.
Well, like, Tencent's not called the EA of the, you know, of
China,
of the Asias for anything, you know, for nothing. So,
well, speaking of them, they're the producer behind a studio right now, called Polaris Quest, that's making a game called Light of Materium, which looks a lot like Horizon Zero Dawn, but it's a free-to-play survival game.
Yeah.
It's uncanny how much, like, it's not like it draws inspiration from it. It's like, it's really close to just ripping off the art design of Horizon. And it plays different than Horizon. Like, don't get me wrong, right? But, like, the art design looks way too close to Horizon Zero Dawn. Like, it's so, almost, like, it's not identical, but, like, it just looks like Horizon Zero Dawn in a different setting.
So, it's technically, it's Horizon Zero Dawn meets, like, meets like a normal, you know, survivor sim, like, you know, your, you know, Age of Conan's or your fucking like Ark Survival Evolved or whatever, that also meets Monster Hunter, because they have different weapons and the skills that you use to take these mechanical animals down is very Monster Hunter style, you know, combat. So it's kind of a mashup of a bunch of different game tropes, different ideas. I looked into it just because of, you know, pure curiosity. They're calling the mech animals. So, like, yeah, it's like, it's a mind bending thing. Like, it's just mechanical animals, put them two together. But it is a straight ripoff of, you know, those exact fucking animals could have been in a Horizon Zero Dawn and they would have looked, you know, not out of place, you know? But yeah, that game is where do you draw the line, right?
Yeah, I'm always leery of. I feel like Tencent's just like slowly tearing apart Western game developers. Hey, we'll see what happens.
I'll see that the. I mean, I understand a lot of that sentiment, but there's also, I mean, it's not the only time, it's not the last time that Tencent's done shit like this. So
do they own Black Myth?
I believe so.
I don't think so. Not right offhand. So
no, it's Game Science.
Game Science does, you know, is the publisher behind that.
Yeah. And so, that's another game I have to finish. Like, holy shit, man.
I haven't touched that either.
I have Souls Fatigue is all.
So Game Science is, you know, was founded by 7 ex-Tencent game employees. So it has ties to Tencent.
It's not quite Tencent.
Right. But and Tencent does own a stake of Game Science, a 5% stake.
Well, and they own 30% of Larian Studios too.
Yeah, so Tencent's basically like an investing firm in a bunch of different game developers. You know, and they stand to make money, you know, off of that particular stance. They have their own group that publishes, right?
Yeah.
But what they're doing is they're just basically throwing money into, you know, the into investments into a bunch of different things. And it's kind of like putting a buck on every number on a roulette table, right?
Well, I mean, they do own 80% of Path of Exile.
Yeah, and it's just a thing, right? There is a lot of a lot of worry about Tencent's money, but it comes down to the actual developers and how much Tencent influences the development and publishing of a game that really makes the difference. I don't necessarily mind the fact that Tencent's making money off of, you know, off of a game, right?
Well, there's
through investments.
Yeah, and there's been some people that have made some smart decisions. So as we've been talking about it, I was like, what does Tencent own? And I ran across a PC Gamer article that says, well, they own 30% of Larian Studios, and their only shareholder, apart from Zwin, what's his name, Zwin Venki, they are what's called a preference share, meaning they don't have voting rights when it comes to their decision making.
Right.
So they are investing to give them money to get money out of that. And apparently, the kind of a similar thing is happening with Grinding Gear Games. They still make all their decisions, but Tencent does own a very huge majority share of Grinding Gear. Grinding Gear is out of New Zealand.
That's and that is. So that's just that's just investing, Whereas what they're talking about for Ubisoft and in that case is they're worried about Ubisoft being swallowed up by some other publisher. So they're thinking about buying out Ubisoft and owning it completely so that they, so that it does not end up, being a bad investment for Tencent. And that's kind of like an, that's kind of like an EA move where they'll just buy up the, buy up the studio.
I think we just worry that if it doesn't have the, make the money that they close studios, right? Just like, because it's Asia's EA,
right? Well, and that is a concern. If if they're not successful, then they then Tencent can make that decision. Whereas right now, just as a shareholder, they might have a say, but they don't necessarily they might not have they definitely don't have a controlling say. So it's a thing. Like, investing is the rich man's casino. So it is concerning, and I can understand that, but, as long as Tencent kind of, is only interested in making money off of successful releases, and not like pushing for, closures or changes in, studio culture or any of that shit, I'm fine with it, I guess. It's, not the best thing in the world, but I mean, it's very, I don't know. It's kind of the American thing to do.
Well,
in a weird way.
Still speaking about Asian developers, right? There is one that I like quite a bit. That's a company called NeoWiz, and they're the guys that did Liza P. So they just stated that their developer Round 8 is working on a new IP, as well as a previously announced sequel to Liza P, as well as DLC for Liza P. And their official statement was, still too early to disclose the progress of the project. It's one on PC and console games that Round 8 Studio is preparing. Man, I just can't read. As they said, for the DLC of the Liza P and the sequel, we aim to do better on what we did well, improve on areas where we have room to grow. And they're working on a sci-fi horror game for their futuristic game, for their futuristic IP. I really like Liza P. It's one of the best, like, Souls-like, non-Souls games that I've played. It's different enough that it doesn't feel too much. It doesn't feel like a copy. It's its own thing, but it's kind of a similar type of gritty setting. It focuses a lot on parry and no dodge. Like, the dodge is trash in Liza P. It wants you to parry. I beat the shit out of that game because that game's really good. And in fact, I think it made it to our Game of the Year list last year, or at least to my personal list. So if you haven't played Liza P, anything NeoWiz does at this point, like, I'm looking forward to, because that game was good. I think everybody here has probably played a shitload of Plague Inc. on their phone while they're sitting and doing nothing. Am I right? Everybody remember what that is?
Madagascar is the starting
point. I fucking love Plague Inc.
So they have a new game they're working on called After Inc. and it's going to be a unique blend of strategic simulation, survival city builder, and a mini 4X. And the challenge is to rebuild civilization.
Nah, I don't want to rebuild civilization. I'm good with coming up with new and terrible ways to infect the entire population.
It is a game that's incredibly simple yet really addictive. So I'm curious as to what they did. I mean, that game's like on freaking everything. That's one of the few mobile games that I've bought. It's been on my iPad forever. But Plague Inc.'s always been pretty fun. And that's been out for like 10 years or something now, right?
Long fucking time.
It's definitely a roguelite in that you can play it at any point and see if you can make the perfect simulation of death. I don't have any new news outside of that.
I got a kick out of this. So, a lot of shit in, in the past, over the past, couple of years, it's been, about game preservation and shit. And there's been some major setbacks recently as far as like government, governmental, bodies basically, blocking, libraries and, education institutions from being able to, to keep backups of video games for study.
Right.
It's really down to, individuals or companies to be able to do any kind of backup, and try to save old games. Well, Good Old Games or GOG has been kind of like one of the, the biggest, signers of these, petitions to try to save video games. And they've done, they've done their own thing to kind of vault old games and, in their own way, and then keep them up to date so that, so that modern hardware can still play these old games. Recently Blizzard had done a re-release of World of Warcraft 1 and 2.
I heard about that.
And that, it's a decent re-release. I saw some gameplay of it from, from one of my coworkers. I didn't remember how fucking annoying it was to hear the, the confirmation tech, things like,
like, what do you mean?
Like when you're clicking on the fucking map, if you're sending orcs in a direction, they will confirm the order every fucking time you click. So it's like, righto, 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 over and over and over again, right?
Work,
right? So, that got on my nerves pretty quickly. But, it's an old game.
I had that as a text message alert for a while.
Right. So, with that re-release of the of World of Warcraft, Warcraft 1 and 2, the RTS, Blizzard decided to delist the original Warcraft 1 and 2 from Good Old Games.
Wait, what?
It's kind of like, they pulled the old version and only want to sell the new version, right? Well, Good Old Games decided to say, nah, we're going to preserve these anyway. And we're going to hand out a discount. And we're going to announce a whole new policy for preserving games, on our platform. So, if you have, if you have a game that's, that's on Good Old Games and it's being delisted by the developers, Good Old Games is going to archive it.
Well, that's good.
They're going to be keeping, those things. And of course, with their side project of trying to keep, the older games, playable on newer hardware, they'll be doing that, in the background on their archive. So it's a step in the right direction. I kind of, the whole thing, like this could be an entire podcast worth of, you know, of discussion, but the reality here is that games aren't just a product. It's also art. And you go to galleries and you see artists' works and sculptures and, you know, and shit from, you know, hundreds, thousands of years ago. But now if you wanted to go and pick up a game or play a game that's more than 15 years old, it's hard, if not impossible.
I haven't tried in a while. The only game that I ever did that routinely with was Fallout 1 and 2.
Right. And that's kind of a thing. Like you really should not be, you know, you should not basically pull these things away, and basically bin them. They're being thrown in the trash. You can't get these games. They're completely lost.
I mean, I have them on CD. The effort
that went into it is gone.
I have them on CD-ROM.
Yeah, and that's fine. You can do that if you own the games. But at what point do those games actually become, like, studyable? Like, if I want to have, say, 10 years from now, I want the next generation of game developers to learn from the mistakes of Ubisoft and not make those same mistakes. They're going to need to see what those mistakes are. You know, they're not going to want to, you know, they're going to want to go back to the original sources to be able to find that information. You know, 10 years from now, you won't be able to play Brotherhood. You unless you own a fucking like PS, you know, PS2 or was it PS3? I can't remember.
Yeah, I want to say it's PS3.
PlayStation and the original disc. And even sometimes, get this shit, even sometimes if you own the fucking disc, it doesn't necessarily mean that you can play the game because they might contact an online server that no longer exists. So that's a whole nother concern. You're like, you're trying to, you know, you're trying to get, you know, you're trying to be able to play this game. You own it, or you own the physical disc copy of it, but you won't be able to play any of it because, you know, the MO for online games, since basically online games have been a thing, has been once the game is no longer, you know, no longer supported, they no longer support it, it's at its end of life, they shut the servers down and forget it exists. But what game preservation activists are doing is trying to change that, where if the game is going end of life, then instead of having it contact out for, you know, for a server and see that it's no longer there, that they, you know, submit for a last patch that basically makes the game playable offline. You know, so that you have, you know, it's still a functional copy of that game. You know, so, I mean, it doesn't work for everything. Like most multiplayer games probably would have, you know, a hard time dealing with that. But for the most part, if it's single player or has a single player element, then that single player element should still be, should still be viable. So I don't know. I just noticed this. I've been kind of following along a lot of the game preservation things, you know, because I sat back. I'm getting older. And as you get older, you're like, man, there's some really good games that I just can't play anymore. Not in their original form, at least. And it's sad because some of those games were just great, you know? even in their simplicity, just great. So now it's maybe that's just me and my version of a midlife crisis. But
sometimes I go back. I just the volume of stuff I've been able to find through this foray into gaming as an adult and doing this podcast is a lot higher than what it was a long time ago. So I don't rarely have time to go back that far.
You know, I just like to be able to see, like, if I'm playing a game right now, I want to be able to go back and enjoy that game with, you know, my nephews, my niece, whatever, you know, and be able to say, hey, this is the game I grew up with. And that's getting harder and harder to do because as games go more and more online, it becomes even harder to keep up with those games. Like you can go to a vintage stock or, you know, like a retro game store and pick up a, you know, a box that basically does, you know, allow you to play those games. If you can find the original cartridges for like this, you know, Nintendo, Super Nintendo, you know, Sega Genesis, as soon as shit started going on CD, it became real hard to, you know, and starting to touch the internet, the preservation became even harder and a lot of that shit is going downhill. So, but yeah. Old games like Bloodborne would be even harder to find, going forward. But
yeah, I was looking to see if they'd announced anything on Bloodborne with the 30th anniversary of Sony, and of course, no.
Yeah, see, so there was the 30th anniversary little trailer that they put out. And that trailer had a bunch of different, you know, little slogans, but it kept Bloodborne right for the end. And saying that it's, you know, it's about persistence. And that got Bloodborne fans, you know, hyped up for another possibility of a Bloodborne remaster. You know, they don't need to remake it. They just need to remaster it so that it's like plays at 60 frames per second at the very least. and. You know, clean up some of the textures, right? So, I recently tried playing Bloodborne on my PS5, like the, you know, the.
Yeah, it comes with PS Plus.
Yeah, you get it for PS Plus, and it's, you know, it's the PlayStation 4 version of it, and man, it is rough. It's like playing that game in, you know, in 30 frames per second after playing, you know, all of the Dark Souls games and Elden Ring on PC and having them, you know, play at 60 frames per second, that game playing at 30 frames per second, you feel like you're missing shit, you know?
It's a little rough, and that game has very tight timings, too.
Yeah, so I would be really happy to see that. Like, I can't imagine them going very far without actually announcing a remaster for this. It's basically one of the games that's being called for most often.
Yeah, we're not looking for a Horizon Zero Dawn remaster. Like, come the fuck on.
We get a Horizon.
It came out like 3 years after it came out.
Right. We get a remaster for that game. It's probably super simple to do a remaster. All they do is drop the files onto the new engine and go. But.
Charge $40.
Bloodborne needs a remaster just to get it up to this, you know, 60 frames per second, clean shit, some of that shit up. I would love to play through that game. It's just real hard for me to get into it at 3. At 30. So, maybe, possibly, you know, sometime down the line, I know we're not getting an Elden Ring 2 anytime soon. They did say that. So,
yeah, we'll just see what Miyazaki's up to next, and it'll probably be 2 or 3 years away before we get anything.
I don't know. I'll wait patiently for a Bloodborne. Shit, Bloodborne could have used a sequel. You know?
Yeah. Well, he doesn't own that IP anymore.
I know he doesn't, but it's one of those it's one of those games like I just want more of that. I mean, if Dark Souls is done and Elden Ring is being shelved for a while, give me some Bloodborne, man. You know?
Yeah, I'd like to replay that too.
But that's basically all I've got for right now. I have exhausted my what I had on deck for news. So,
well, Jason, where can you find us?
Find us at tiltcast.com. Find us on Facebook and Twitter.com/tiltcast. Our YouTube channel is youtube.com/realtiltcast. And search for us on iTunes and Spotify. Subscribe.
Find some friends to show. We've got For the Love of Gaming. We've got hardly anybody else. Picking Up the Pixels and tvgp.tv. I'm guessing Boston's playing Indiana Jones. And with that,
of course he is.
It's the end of the show.
All right. Peace.